Children of Millhaven. The first sighting came on a Tuesday evening in October when Mrs. Eleanor Hartwell was drawing her curtains against the early dusk that had settled over the village of Millhaven. Through her front window she glimpsed two children standing motionless at her garden gate. A boy and girl, perhaps 10 and 12 years old, dressed in simple, dark clothing that seemed oddly formal, almost Victorian in style. "Can we come in, please?" the girl called out, her voice carrying clearly across the small front garden despite the closed window. "We need to use your telephone." Eleanor's hand froze on the curtain fabric. Something about their stillness, the way they stood perfectly aligned like bookends, sent a chill down her spine. In 40 years of living in Millhaven, she knew every child in the village, but these faces were unfamiliar. "It's very important," the boy added, his voice equally clear and strangely mature. "We need to call our parents." Eleanor found herself moving toward the front door, her hand already reaching for the latch, when she caught sight of their eyes through the glass panel. Even in the dim evening light, she could see they were wrong, completely, utterly wrong. Black as coal, black as the space between stars, with no trace of white or iris. Just endless, consuming darkness. She stumbled backwards, her heart hammering against her ribs. When she looked again, the children were gone. By November, the sightings had multiplied. The Reverend Michael Davies encountered them outside St. Bartholomew's after evening service, 3 children this time, asking to come inside the church. "We're very cold," they said in unison, their breath visible in the autumn air despite the mild weather. The Reverend, a man who had served his parish faithfully for 23 years, found himself backing away from the church doors he had just locked. Their eyes, dear God, their eyes were like looking into an abyss. He fumbled for his mobile phone to call the police, but when he looked up again, the churchyard was empty, save for the ancient yews swaying in the wind. Sarah Mitchell, who ran the village post office, nearly let them into her shop during closing time. 2 girls, perhaps siblings, with pale faces and dark hair, wearing matching wool coats that looked like they'd stepped out of the 1950s. They pressed their small palms against the glass door, leaving no prints. "We'd like to buy some sweets," they said, their voices muffled but perfectly audible through the glass. "Please let us in. We have money." Her finger was already moving toward the lock when she saw their reflection in the security mirror, or rather, the lack of it. The children cast no reflection at all. Her scream echoed through the empty shop as she ran to the back room, not emerging until her husband arrived 20 minutes later to find the street deserted. The phenomenon might have remained isolated to a few frightened residents, but then came the night of November 15th, when the Ashworth family became the first to actually let them in. David and Linda Ashworth lived in Rose Cottage with their 8-year-old daughter, Emma. David was in his workshop when he heard the knocking, soft, persistent, rhythmic. 3 children stood on his doorstep, 2 boys and a girl, all with that same unsettling stillness that had marked the other encounters. "Our car broke down," the girl explained, her voice carrying an odd, hypnotic quality. "We may please come in and wait while our father fixes it? We're very frightened." David found himself nodding, stepping aside despite every instinct screaming at him to slam the door. It wasn't until they were already in his hallway, already moving deeper into his home, that he saw their eyes properly under the electric light. By then, it was too late. Linda found him the next morning, standing in the kitchen, staring blankly at the wall. Emma was beside him, equally still, equally vacant. Neither responded to their names or physical touch. They would stand exactly where they were placed, occasionally moving to get food or water, but otherwise remaining motionless for hours at a time. The doctors could find nothing wrong. Blood tests, brain scans, psychological evaluations, everything came back normal. But their eyes, once warm brown and bright blue respectively, had begun to darken around the edges, as if some creeping shadow was slowly consuming them from within. Word spread through Millhaven like wildfire. Parents began collecting their children early from school, boarding up windows, refusing to answer doors after sunset. But the black-eyed children adapted, appearing now during daytime hours, always in groups, always perfectly polite, always asking for entry. They appeared at the primary school during lunch break, pressing their faces against the playground fence. "May we come and play?" they asked the children inside, who were mysteriously drawn to the fence despite their teachers' frantic attempts to call them back. They stood outside the village pub, the King's Head, asking to come in from the rain, though no rain was falling. They appeared at bus stops, asking for rides to places that didn't exist on any map. Dr. James Whitefield, the village GP, began documenting the encounters with scientific precision. What he discovered chilled him to the bone. Every sighting followed the same pattern. Children of various ages, always perfectly groomed and dressed in clothing that seemed decades out of date. They never appeared alone, always in groups of two or four. They never entered without explicit permission, but once invited in, the consequences were always the same. The affected individuals, now numbering 7 in total, displayed identical symptoms, complete docility, minimal verbal response, and that gradual darkening of the eyes that seemed to progress over weeks. Most disturbing of all, the affected began to gather each evening at sunset, standing in the village green in perfect formation, motionless as statues until dawn. Mrs. Agnes Pemberton, Millhaven's self-appointed historian and keeper of local lore, spent sleepless nights researching in the village archives. What she found buried in century-old parish records made her hands tremble as she read by lamplight. The last recorded outbreak had been in 1923. Before that, 1847, and before that, 1771. Each time the same descriptions, children with eyes like midnight seeking entry to homes and hearts. Each outbreak had ended the same way, with a third of the village population standing empty-eyed and silent until they simply weren't there anymore. Agnes's great-grandmother's diary contained the most chilling entry. "The children come every 76 years when the comet returns. They collect souls like others collect stamps. We must not let them in, but oh, how they make you want to, how they make you need to." She calculated frantically. 1923 plus 76, 1999. But it was 2023 now. They were 24 years late. Unless. She rushed to her computer, searching astronomical databases with shaking fingers. Halley's Comet wasn't due until 2061, but there, Comet Encke, orbital period 3.3 years, visible every... She calculated rapidly. Yes, it could create a rough 76-year cycle when accounting for optimal visibility conditions. And Comet Encke was currently approaching its closest point to Earth. The final confrontation came on a moonless December night. Agnes had gathered the remaining unaffected villagers, barely 30 souls, in St. Bartholomew's Church. Reverend Davies had blessed every entrance, sprinkled holy water on every threshold, and led them in prayers from half-dozen faiths. Outside, the black-eyed children had gathered in unprecedented numbers, dozens of them representing every era from the past century and beyond. Victorian children in pressed wool, 1920s boys in knickers and caps, 1940s girls in simple dresses, and more recent additions wearing modern clothes that somehow looked wrong on their still forms. They surrounded the church, but did not approach. They simply stood, waiting, their collective gaze fixed on the ancient stone building. "We know you're in there," came a voice, not spoken, but somehow heard by everyone inside simultaneously. It was the voice of every child who had ever asked for entry, harmonized into something that was both beautiful and terrible. "We've been so patient. We've waited so long. Won't you please let us in? We only want to come home." Agnes felt the pull then, stronger than anything she had experienced in her 78 years. The overwhelming need to open the doors, to invite them in, to end the standoff and give them what they wanted. Around her she could see the other villagers struggling with the same compulsion. But she remembered her great-grandmother's final diary entry. "They are not children. They wear the shapes of children like masks. But underneath, underneath is something that hungered before the world was young. Do not let them in. No matter how much it hurts to refuse, no matter how much you want to say yes." The siege lasted until dawn. As the first rays of sunlight touched the church spire, the children began to fade, becoming translucent, then transparent, then gone entirely. But Agnes knew they weren't truly gone, just waiting, patient, as always, for the next opportunity, the next moment of weakness. In the weeks that followed, the affected villagers returned to normal, as if waking from a long dream. They remembered nothing of their vacant months, nothing of their nightly gatherings, nothing of the darkness that had crept through their eyes. Millhaven returned to its quiet routine, but those who remembered kept watch. They taught their children never to invite strangers inside, no matter how polite, no matter how needy, no matter how much they appeared to be children. And sometimes, on particularly dark nights, residents would glimpse small figures standing at the edge of the village, just beyond the streetlight's reach, waiting, watching, patient, as only the very old can be patient. For the children of Millhaven, the real children, the living ones, learned to trust their instincts. When something cold touched their hearts at the sight of a too still figure, when every fiber of their being screamed danger despite an innocent appearance, they listened. because the black-eyed children always return, and they never, ever stop asking to come in.